Welcome to a Moray House Trust podcast. Moray House Trust is a private non-profit based in Georgetown and dedicated to promoting Guyanese culture. This podcast is part of our 1763 series. We hope you enjoy it.
Slave Rebellions at Sea and on Land, a comparative perspective by Professor Winston McGowan, written in 2005 as a part of the Walter Rodney Lecture Series. Read by Nikita Blair. This extract was edited for your listening pleasure. Introduction. No subject in Caribbean history has captured the interest of both scholars and the general public as much as slavery and slave resistance. Traditionally, scholars have classified slave resistance in two categories. Firstly, they speak about passive, day-to-day resistance, that is, the slave's regular and frequent resorts to non-violent resistance. This passive resistance, which is difficult to quantify, was not designed to overthrow the slave system. Instead, it was intended to undermine its effectiveness, perhaps with the hope of causing its eventual abandonment. It was done in innumerable, often subtle or secret ways, including displaying insolence to overseers, pretending to misunderstand instructions, malingering, doing bad work, feigning illness, and stealing, damaging, and destroying the master's property. The second type of slave resistance scholars identified is referred to as active resistance. This concept embodies a more positive, visible, and violent anti-slavery action. This category includes homicide, striking the whites, flight, and rebellions. Slave rebellions in Caribbean societies varied considerably in scale and impact. Some were extensive uprisings involving an entire territory or a substantial part of a territory. Others were small-scale revolts, often limited to a single plantation. The major Caribbean slave rebellions have been the focus of considerable scholarly research. In fact, they have been the subject of entire monographs or lengthy chapters in other historical works. In contrast, there has been very little scholarly focus on slave rebellions at sea before the arrival of slave ships in the Americas from Africa. This comparative neglect of maritime rebellions is due partly to the relative paucity of written records about slave resistance at sea. For example, it is known that some captains of slave vessels deliberately never recorded slave uprisings at sea. They feared that such accounts might damage their prospects for future employment, especially if their employers charged them with insufficiency, laxity, or inability to control slaves. Partly for this reason, much less is known about slave rebellions at sea than about those on land. Regardless of location, whether at sea or on land, slave rebellions were very complex, multifaceted events. Part 2. The frequency of rebellions. One significant but little known difference between slave insurrections at sea and on land was their frequency. However, there was a much higher incidence of revolts on board these ships than among slave societies in the Americas. In fact, contrary to popular belief, there was relatively few mass uprising slave rebellions on land in Caribbean history. One reason for this comparatively small number of rebellions was that they were difficult to organize without detection before their outbreak. Detection occurred in two ways: when diligent whites observed suspicious movements among the slaves, or when slave informers, influenced by a variety of considerations, betrayed the plans for the rebellion. Early detection enabled slave owners to take effective preventative action, such as arresting the leaders of the rebellion and deploying troops in order to forestall the outbreak of planned slave insurrections. Historians refer to the insurrections that were nipped in the bud as slave plots or conspiracies. They were quite common in Caribbean history. According to the anthropological scholar Robert Dirks, there were 70 slave uprisings in the British West Indies mentioned in the literature. These occurred between 1649 and 1833. Of these, there were 32 revolts which did not materialize because of prior discovery. Apart from the major difficulty of organizing revolts, especially those involving many slaves over a wide geographical area, the number of slave rebellions on land was restricted by at least two other main factors. Firstly, the slaves knew from experience that revolts were likely to fail. They also knew that rebels, especially the leaders, would be subjected to severe punishment, such as brutal whippings, torture, or death. This knowledge discouraged many of them from rebelling. Those who were determined to gain their freedom often preferred to resort to the less dangerous and more successful means of flight. Secondly, therefore, flight, not rebellion, was the normal and preferred means of escape from slavery in the Americas. Many plantations did not experience an outbreak of rebellion throughout their entire history. However, they were all at some time, and in some cases always, affected by runaways. In short, while all slaves on land were involved in day-to-day resistance, and while some attempted to run away, it seems that most slaves were never involved in a rebellion. Part 3. The reasons for rebellion. There were some common factors that were partially responsible for the uprisings on both land and sea. The first and most fundamental cause of both types of rebellion was identical, namely, the basic, natural, God-given human desire to be free. This desire was the foundation of the slaves' anti-slavery consciousness and action at sea as well as on land. This is an important point to note, as many studies of slavery attach little to no importance to the slaves' inherent desire for freedom. The late Richard Sheridan, the most renowned authority on the early economic history of the Caribbean, neglected to include this perspective in his analyses. In his work entitled Sugar and Slavery, An Economic History of the British West Indies, 1623 to 1775, he argued that, and I quote, "Slaves were prone to run away or resist when they were overworked, underfed, and harshly punished." This view was also shared by some slaveholders, who were then shocked and baffled when even their most privileged slaves rebelled. The basic desire for liberty must have been strengthened by the fact that almost all slaves at sea and many on land had been born free in Africa. Losing their cherished freedom because of the Atlantic slave trade would have further prompted rebellions. Secondly, the severe conditions and extreme repression which usually characterized the Atlantic slave trade and New World slavery also fueled rebellions. Although there were some common features across land and sea, notably underfeeding and the sexual harassment of females, there were also some notable differences. For example, physical brutality and overwork were major abuses in the slave systems on land, but were not normally among the major evils during the Middle Passage. Physical brutality seems to have been one of the principal causes of the 1763 Berbee Slave Rebellion. Its initial leader, Kofi, attributed the revolt to the maltreatment of slaves by eight planters or managers in the head division of the river where the uprising began. Similarly, overwork was the main cause of the 1823 Demerara slave rebellion. Around this time, planters were transitioning from cotton cultivation to sugar production. While cotton was less labor-intensive, it was failing at the time. Therefore, planters tried to increase the amount of labor from a numerically declining labor force to support the labor-intensive sugar production. Thirdly, slaves were also prompted to revolt because of the anger and sense of alienation they felt after being removed from Africa, their beloved and sacred motherland. It was painful to be separated from their families, friends, communities, and protective deities and spirits. These feelings caused some slaves to experience excessive grief and deep depression, even to the point of pining for death. In others, however, they prompted a spirit of active resistance and rebellion. James Towne, an Englishman who made two slaving voyages to West Africa in the 1760s, reported later that he asked the slaves why they attempted insurrections on slave ships. He said, and I quote, "The reasons that were given to me were, what business had we to make slaves of them and carry them away from their own country? That they had wives and children and wanted to be with them." The desire to return to their homes and rejoin their families is said to have motivated coastal Africans in particular during the Middle Passage. Similarly, the intensity of the slaves' anger, pain, and alienation over their removal from Africa helps to explain the prominence of unassimilated African-born slaves who were involved in rebellions in the British Caribbean. Their numbers stand in striking contrast to the Creole slaves, who were relatively passive, with few exceptions. Lastly, slave revolts during the Middle Passage and on land in the Americas were also prompted and facilitated by favorable circumstances which the slaves exploited. The most critical of these propitious circumstances was weaknesses in the security system designed to control the slaves. For example, in Berbice in 1763, the slaves took advantage of the failure to enforce the pass laws. These laws had been introduced as early as 1735 to control slave movements between plantations, especially at night. However, the Dutch failed to enforce these laws. Governor Van Hoogenheim lamented that this failure enabled the slaves to move around freely to plan and organize the rebellion. At the end of the revolt, he observed the following, and I quote, "Letting the slaves roam around at night is one of the greatest mistakes in the handling of slaves. It has always happened here, and I complained about it frequently. Probably, it is one of the chief causes of the entire revolution." The Berbice slaves also started the rebellion at a time when the colony's two security forces were greatly weakened. The garrison of professional soldiers and the civilian burgher militia had been numerically impacted by an epidemic and were obviously incapable of suppressing a rebellion.
This was a Moray House Trust podcast. Thank you very much for listening.